How's it going, people? This is DJ Rains, and you are listening to the second episode of Mindspace. This is the second episode of Mindspace. My name is David. I am known on the internet as DJ Rain, or DJ Rains is my gamer tag. And for those of you who heard the first episode, I know it's been quite a while, probably 4 to 6 weeks since that episode. Well, all I can say is that life pretty much went crazy. My parents' house was going into foreclosure, and so my brother and my sister and myself, we're all, you know, they're all in their 30s and 40s. I'm the youngest, and I'm in my 20s, so we're all getting together trying to figure out if my parents would need to move in with somebody, if their house foreclosed, and why, and that situation's still ongoing, but needless to say, when life happens, podcasting tends to stop for me, because I got so many things going on, but it is very good to be able to get back in. Back on the mic, back on Mindspace, and back into talking about games. Hopefully you guys have had a chance to check out Gamers Transform. Good news, we are now part of TAG, which is nice for me because I had, you know, I started off in all this as a blogger, and whenever we were had our own website, as far as Gamers Transform was concerned, I was trying to keep up with my blog, but mainly I was trying to push content onto Gamers Transform and get the word out of things about there and generate some foot traffic on the website, you know, get the podcasts out there, things like that. Being part of TAG kind of helps me consolidate what I'm doing, so now I've got the blog, and I'm doing Gamers Transform with Soldier X, and things are going good. So, again, with this podcast, Mindspace, just basically trying to see what I'm going to do with it and where I'm going with it. Right now, I am going to talk about games, and so hopefully you're in the mood to hear about games. Basically, a lot of people think there's nothing to talk about right now, and it seems like that's hitting the podcast simply because the summer lull is happening. I mean, goodness, the summer lull is happening. For Game and Transform, what we're currently working on right now, we're going to be doing a podcast on the last podcast we did was Duke Nukem, which opinions varied about that game. I have my personal opinion about games, but I like the type of games that are designed for the type of gamer that I am. And there are people who love Duke Nukem. I'm not going to knock them for that. All I will say is that for me personally, Duke Nukem really wasn't up my alley. It wasn't something that I was going to go for, both because of the age of the game and because of some of the content in it. But up on Gamer Transform next, hopefully we'll be doing a podcast on Transformers Dark of the Moon, which if anyone took the time to actually play the other Transformers game that came out, War for Cybertron, you'll know that the game wasn't horrible. Actually, for a Transformers game, and for what normally passes as comic booky games or movie type games, it was actually really good. And so I think we can actually have a really good discussion, an interesting discussion about Transformers Dark of the Moon in light of it kind of being the follow-up from High Moon Studios, the people who had such a success with Transformers War for Cybertron. So that's what's up there. Hopefully also I can get Soldier X to look into doing Deus Ex podcast in August, and then of course I think we're going to do a podcast on Call of Juarez, a round table. Hopefully we can get some people involved with that have played the game, give their opinions on it. And all I'm going to say about that game, I've played a little bit of it, I'll have to play a little bit more before the podcast. That game is kind of indicative of what is happening to shooters. Production values aside, all I'll just say is, it seemed like they had a game, and they decided it was going to feature drugs and that it was going to have a mature rating, and then they figured out what the game was going to be, rather than figuring out what story you wanted, figuring out where you were going, and then building the game true to your vision, and then saying, okay, now what rating is this going to get? In my mind. But I'll talk about that more. So please tune in to Gamers Transform. We are part of the Talking About Games website now, and you will see us on iTunes. Please listen, give us a review. And also, of course, this podcast, Mindspace, is on iTunes now. I finally figured out how to do it, submitted it to Apple, I guess. They put it up there, so we're good to go, and this episode's going to be up on iTunes, so you feel free to subscribe. I'm going to try to be a little bit more regular with what I'm talking about with the podcast, a little bit more predictable about the subject matter. But now that all that's out of the way and I'm back, we can go ahead and talk about the summer lull. As we know, it's kind of hitting people hard. Podcasts tend to be talking about the history of the gaming industry, where they think it's going, old games that they're playing. Indie games are getting a lot of airtime now, which is good. I mean, it's a good time for the summer of arcade with the lull. But what I would like to talk about today, a few things, but the first thing I want to get on is the biggest games this fall that I'm personally looking forward to, what I expect from them, and what I hope that they are, and of course, what I fear that they could end up being. And so, with E3 coming around and coming and going, actually, a lot of the hype from the show was about Battlefield 3, so that's where I'm going to start. So recently I was listening to Podcast Beyond. It's one of the podcasts I listen to, one of the 20 or 30 weekly, I guess you'd say, that I listen to. And those guys over there had some comments about Battlefield 3. They said they played a build for PS3. And I guess the best thing to say is just that they weren't quite impressed. In fact, seeing as that the game comes out in like 3 months, they were thinking that this game may even be bumped backwards to 2012 based on how far it's come, looking at the build that they played. Many of the aspects weren't yet implemented, such as textures that were missing, the destruction models weren't finalized, weren't in their final form. And so their podcast kind of made me a little wary of what to expect about Battlefield 3. I know that at E3 and from the scenes I saw and the conferences I saw at E3, Battlefield looked amazing. The animation looked great. It looked smooth. It looked almost photorealistic. And if you take the gameplay from Battlefield 2, as far as the multiplayer is concerned, you roll it in with that kind of visual fidelity and a little bit more realistic and unpredictable damage models for blowing things up, destructible environments, I say you have a really good game on your hands. I say you have something that could really pull people in. It could be the exclamation point on this console generation. And I say that because when you look at this console generation, where we started and where we are now, I've been doing this because I've been going back and playing some older games recently. It's come a long way. It has introduced a lot of new things. And some of my favorite gaming franchises of all time have been part of this console generation. Mass Effect has to be up there as one of the greatest, in my mind, of course, my opinion, one of the greatest gaming franchises ever. With the first two, they didn't waste any time. They had a clear vision for the first one, you could tell. In the second one, they updated it. They changed a lot of things associated with it. Moved away from RPG elements towards shooter. And now you've got a great prospect for a third game. I can't wait to see what they do. Assassin's Creed, this console generation. Again, they had a clear idea of what they wanted to do, and they developed it and grew it, and now, you know, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood was great, in my opinion, and I'm looking forward to Assassin's Creed Revelations, which I'll talk about in a second. So, Battlefield 3, if it came out and they could find a way to optimize the PS3 and Xbox 360 hardware to pull every ounce of processing power out of it to make the enemies have decent AI if you're playing the campaign, if you're playing multiplayer, give me the visuals, give me the awesome solid gameplay of Battlefield Bad Company. Give me a few new bells and whistles thrown in, and you're a contender for Game of the Year, obviously, in my mind. A lot of people think Game of the Year has to be innovative. For me, it's just what was my best game of that year. And so Battlefield 3 was right up there. So I want to be very excited for this game. And part of it is due to the fact of my experience that I had playing Battlefield 2. Battlefield 2 had a lot of good elements. I appreciated the differences between it and Modern Warfare 2, which I also played a little bit of. And I guess personally, I don't know why this is, but I kind of want to see Call of Duty dethroned. I think part of it is the Activision's been cast as the evil empire by a lot of the gaming media, and somewhere in the back of my mind, I think I started to drink the Kool-Aid. I know that's not right, and I shouldn't think of them that way, and I try not to think of them that way, but I would like to see Call of Duty kind of taken a step back. I mean, Modern Warfare 3 is going to be the best-selling game this year. Everyone expects that, but I would like to see them take pause and start looking what some of the other games are doing, and different ways of achieving, you know, a good player base, different ways of achieving player progression, things like that. I'd like to see them play around with their model a little bit. But not to say that Call of Duty isn't a great game, because, you know, Modern Warfare 2 is one of the best. It's another example of what our console generation has brought and how good it's been. Well, people would argue Modern Warfare 1. I never played Modern Warfare 1, and I haven't played Black Ops. So Modern Warfare 2 is my benchmark in that series. Unfortunately, I can't get my hopes up as high for Battlefield 3 as I would like, and this is also because of my experience with Battlefield Bad Company 2. What I noticed from this game was that there was very little that encouraged you to jump online, throw yourself in the matchmaking by yourself, and just play. It was a very tactical game, more tactical than Modern Warfare, I would say, personally. More tactical. Well, let me back up. Not more tactical than Modern Warfare. Not more tactical than Halo. It's a different type of tactical. This is more of a team tactical game. Meaning, you go up against four people on a fire team that are coordinated, and they can run the map against randoms. They can just be good like that. They can know where they're going, know what they're doing, and just be good. So for me, as someone who plays with randoms a lot, and this is simply because I don't have a lot of personal friends that play games, in addition to that, game nights for older games are few and far between, and let's face it, whenever I do join a game night, it tends to explode, or something weird happens, or invitations aren't sent out by the person hosting it, or whatever. I have bad luck with game nights. That's just the way it is. But, so for me, playing as a random in a game, and I'm constantly getting cut down by teams of snipers, I'm constantly getting spawn killed by helicopters, I'm not looking forward. Well, that being the case in my experience with Battlefield Bad Company 2, I found the enjoyment in that game. I understand why people play it. I understand why they like it. And I worked to find that. And although the process wasn't always pleasant, there were a lot of game nights where I wasn't having fun. Eventually, I found it. I found my niche. I found out how to play. And I found my enjoyment in that game. I'm not looking forward to dropping down another $60 on a game which I'm going to have to work to find my spot. Work to find my what I enjoy about the game. I just don't want to have bad experiences when I'm playing online. And I had more with Battlefield Bad Company than I unfortunately did with Halo Reach or the Modern Warfares, simply because of the type of the game it is. It's more of a team-based game, and I don't normally play with a lot of friends. The other thing that I want from this game, I want a proper deathmatch mode. I want 8-on-8, 16-on-16, 32-on-32, whatever they want to do. But I want a proper deathmatch mode without vehicles, without objectives, just, hey, control the map. And I guess maybe in some ways you could be saying that I'm looking for Modern Warfare 2 inside of Battlefield 2, Battlefield 3, I mean, or a Modern Warfare style. But isn't that what Battlefield 3 is trying to do? isn't what the developers have said they're trying to do. We're going to dethrone Call of Duty. We're going to take Call of Duty, make it better than they do, and then run with it. I mean, that's basically what they've said. So if they want to do that, they really need to come with it and give me something to incentivize me as the lone gamer online for why I should play their game, which emphasizes teamwork, which is hard to organize with randoms, over a game like Call of Duty or Halo, which is more individualistic. The other thing that I have concerns about is, again, how this game is going to look on PS3 and 360. I don't think it's going to be a bad-looking game. I don't think it's going to be less than any other game. It's going to be on par with what comes out this fall. I mean, it's going to have graphical fidelity in its own way, ignoring art direction, that's on par with Gears, Call of Duty, you know, Skyrim, all those games. They're all going to have their niche, and they're all going to be good examples of the top of what we've achieved in this console generation. But whenever I see the game shown at E3 and everyone's wowing all the visuals and it's great and it's beautiful, and oh, by the way, all this was on PC, so okay, it's not going to look that on my console. Oh, and by the way, this is only 60 frames, this is only 30 frames per second, it's not going to be 60. Well, okay, and I understand you need to achieve that by some of the things you're accomplishing, but I would really like to see you push the envelope in that area, because you said you were going to top Modern Warfare in every area, and one of the areas that they're good in is their graphical fidelity. So I'd love to see them bring it with that. Other thing I want from Call of Duty, Battlefield 3, and this is something you'll hear me say more than once in this podcast, I want co-op. I want a campaign that's tactical, that I've got three guys around me, that I can also play with three or four friends through the campaign. And I want matchmaking so I can play with three or four randoms through the campaign or through a certain section of it or missions. You give me that, and then we're talking. So since I've said this several times and talked about the comparison between Battlefield and Modern Warfare, let's take a look at Modern Warfare. I have no doubt that Modern Warfare will be exactly what everyone expects it to be. It's going to be another thrill ride from Activision. It's going to look good. It's going to play well, and it's going to sell really well. I understand that gaming needs its blockbusters. As long as people are making money on games like they're making on Modern Warfare, we will always have new console generations. The thing we need to worry about is when iPhone games are making money and Modern Warfare's not selling. When that happens, okay, now we got to wonder if our consoles are going to go away or disappear and reemerge in some other form, or if I'm going to be Bluetoothing a controller to my iPhone and connecting it to my TV to play games. I mean, that could happen in the future. Who knows? But the gaming industry benefits from success. And maybe Modern Warfare and its success tends to stomp on some other games, but I would like to think that the industry is big enough to where we have room for everybody. The Modern Warfare multiplayer, there's certain things that have always bothered me, simply because, and I have a unique experience, I guess, with Modern Warfare than some, because when I picked up Modern Warfare 2, the game had been out 8 months, so I was starting from scratch. I'm a noob, everyone's been playing for 8 months, they know the maps, they know the weapons, they know where everyone normally runs, they know where to hide, they know, they have the feel of everything, so I start off dying, horribly. And what I learned through the process of playing that game is the game rewards the best players, and conversely through that hurts the lower players. If you're a good player, we'll discuss matchmaking in a second, but if you're a good player, this is what you see. You've got the best guns, you know the maps already because you've been playing to rank up to earn those guns, and now as you get kills, 2 kills, 3 kills, 4 kills, you get a kill streak perk. Okay, so now that you're already doing well, we're going to let you do even better. We're going to give you a turret, we're going to give you a jet, machine gunning people down. Oh, you got more kills? That extends your kill streak. You get another bonus. And so what happens is you get these people on these huge kill streaks. That in itself is not a problem. I love getting kill streaks. I love throwing a turret out there and letting it do work for me while I'm spotting up behind it, killing somebody else. And it's a thrill. It is a thrill to get on a kill streak. What I don't appreciate about that is, as a new player, it makes the game very, very unfriendly. Because the game doesn't matchmake me with only people on my level. I'm playing with level 30s, I'm playing with level 50s. And so they're getting all these kill streaks, and I've got the sucky gun with no scopes or attachments and barely any perks, and I'm running them on the map, and I'm giving them their kill streaks. I'm dying. I'm dying left and right. I'm having to outsmart them to win, but I'm fighting a battle uphill. It's not a level playing field. And so that bugs me about Modern Warfare. That being said, if you're a dedicated Modern Warfare fan and you get in on day one, you're going to have a good time. And that's what it's about. It's about getting in when everyone else does. It's about the experience of ranking up with your friends or your team and then being the guy with all the perks and all the weapons and all the options. So with that, what I'm hoping from Modern Warfare 3 is more customizable experience, better gun balance. I don't want there to be a go-to assault rifle. I don't. What I want is 5 assault rifles with different advantages and disadvantages. So ranking up doesn't give me a better gun than everyone else. It gives me more options on how to fight. Maybe this assault rifle is a 3-round burst and it's extremely accurate. So it's a long-range assault rifle. So when I'm playing on a long-range map, that's the one I use. In fact, I could even attach a sniper scope to it and snipe people with it, okay? That's one thing. On the other hand, maybe you've got an assault rifle that kind of borders the line of machine gun or submachine gun, but high damage, not as accurate, but spits out bullets like nobody's business. I mean, so you can literally just mow people down with it. On a long-range map, it's not going to be as useful, but on a close-range map, it will. That's the kind of variation I'm looking for in guns. And you could say the same thing about perks and other things in Modern Warfare. And again, I haven't played Black Ops, so maybe they did all that in Black Ops. And if that's the case, that's great. But I would also like to see it in Modern Warfare 3. Excuse me. And of course, Modern Warfare, I want co-op. I love co-op, and that's one other thing I'm looking for. Another big game this fall, what I'm hoping to play, Skyrim. Now, I'm debating about this game. Should I buy this game, pre-order it to get a discount on it, play it across the December time frame, or should I wait for prices to drop and play it over next summer? And I say that because whenever I start playing this game, I know it's going to suck me into its world, and I'm not going to come up for air for a month or more, as far as gaming is concerned. I'm not going to be playing Halo. I'm not going to be playing Gears. I'm not going to be playing Call of Duty. I am going to be in Skyrim, living that world, ranking up my character, and having fun with it. And as a result, I need time to do this. So whether I pre-order it and play it over December, or I play it over next summer, I have a feeling that this game is going to be one of the best worlds we've ever seen. If you think about it, Oblivion was kind of an entry into this console generation. Elder Scrolls Oblivion. Since then, they've made Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas, as well as, I'm sure, other games, but those are the ones I'm popular with. And they've learned a lot from those games. So now we come back to Skyrim at the end of our console generation. Honestly, I think it's a beautiful thing to see kind of like this. It's poetic, this full circle of you're introducing us to our console generation with this is what new RPGs can be, and then at the end, you're showing us, look at how far we've come. This is the pinnacle of what RPGs are for this console generation, as far as open world, fantasy. And that truly is going to be, I think, the best representation we're going to get in this console generation for a living, breathing world that you can walk into and be a part of and affect. So I'm really looking forward to that game. So one of the things that I've been doing, thinking about upcoming games, is I've been going back and playing past games. One thing that I have been impressed with is the Tom Clancy games. I missed out on most of them. But I went back and I've tried out a little bit of the original Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter. I've gone back and run through Splinter Cell Conviction, and I'm playing through Rainbow Six Vegas 2 right now. That being said, when it comes to tactical shooters and co-op experiences that I want, the Tom Clancy games are doing something right, and they're doing something in a way that really nobody else is. I cannot wait for Ghost Recon Future Soldier. What I want them to do is take all the elements of these other games that they've made. I want to see the stealth. I want to see the fun run and gun gameplay. I want to see the good damage model. I mean, in most games, pistols are throwaway. But if you're in a pinch and you've got the skill, you can headshot someone that's charging you with a sniper rifle in the game and bring them down with one bullet from a pistol. I like that. That's realism. That lets me know, that makes me, first of all, feel powerful and feel good at the game as a gamer, even if I really aren't, am not. And it makes it so that every gun is a viable option. And rather than having crap guns that you need to throw away and pick up something else, you've got a different tool set. I also like the fact in Rainbow Six that they allow you to change the way your gun fires. One bullet, three bullets, or rapid fire. I like the fact that I can, on the fly, add a scope or take a scope off. Well, you may not be able to do that on the fly. I think that's only at special equipment points. But I can take my silencer off and go loud. I can put it on and go silent. I mean, I like those things. I like the options because it's always giving me two new tactical ways. I even enjoy the way the squad commands are in that game. Once you get into it and you get used to it, it's easy. You don't really forget it. It's pretty intuitive once you understand what they're trying to do, and you can run with it. So if they can take the lessons that they've learned this console generation and put it into Ghost Recon Future Soldier, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for some game nights. That is probably going to be my favorite military shooter that comes out within the next calendar year from now. Not 2011, but within 12 months from now. And so as a result, I'm ready. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to some game nights with that. So that being said, moving away a little bit from the shooters, the next game on my list is Assassin's Creed Revelations. I like Assassin's Creed as a series. I bought the first game, played through it several times, and what I liked about that game is that it made you feel powerful. Well, let me back up. It made you feel skilled. You kind of put you in a little sandbox for each mission. It made you run up and take people out, hiding in crowds, disappearing. You know, the fact that you looked like a priest in that game was actually an interesting little mechanic. I think that was good. I think that they kind of went away from that with the most recent games. And there are some changes in the most recent games I don't like that I'll talk about real quick. The first that I can't say I'm not completely in love with is the fact that you can fight with the hidden blades. Only for this reason. Because I can fight with the hidden blades, I am always in a position to make an assassination at any time. In the first game, I couldn't fight with my hidden blades, so if I got caught, I'm stuck here with a hand. I gotta switch real quick to my other weapons and use those, and I can't just assassinate someone when they're on the ground unless I have my hidden blade. So it made it an interesting dynamic to where the hidden blade was your stealth kill weapon. And once you had passed that, you really didn't have much else that you could do. You had to, if you lost your stealth, okay, we're looking at your dagger, you're looking at your sword. And even those had their own roles. Like, for instance, the dagger was more likely to get you an instant counter kill. So, yeah, the dagger was harder to use, but you're much more likely, if you get it right, to kill the person instead of having them just block or punching them or something. With the sword, in my mind, it was my fallback whenever I was surrounded by a bunch of people. Because I just, at that point, I'm not trying to kill everybody. I'm just trying not to take hits and get out of there. The sword was a good defensive weapon to use. That also, of course, had some, you could counter with it. It really didn't have a whole lot of offensive capabilities. But that was because combat in the first Assassin's Creed wasn't that offensive. With the new games, they allowed you to fight with the hidden blades, and I like the style of fighting with the hidden blades and the way it works, but I will say that the other weapons kind of lose their meaning. I mean, basically, in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, you've got your hidden blades, you've got the weapons that you shoot with, and then you've got your big weapons that you can use to take people down off of horses. But otherwise, there really wasn't any difference. Why choose a hammer over a sword? Why choose a big sword over a little sword? They're all almost equally effective, and in main most combat situations, why not just stick with your hidden blades anyways? So, I'm hoping they change some of that. The other thing that I want is some more stealth options. The whole idea of this first game was planning your attack and carrying it out. In Assassin's Creed 1, you'd have to listen in on clues or steal things, and it would be things to help you prepare for your mission. Oh, you know, this door is normally left open at this time, or there's scaffolding you can climb on this side of the building to get in unseen. Things like that were awesome. In the later games, it became more cinematic, but as a result, they lost a little bit of that. They lost your ability to plan assassinations. You lost a little bit of your ability to feel like the mastermind of this situation and kind of watch it all play out as you control your character through a level. And so this is what I want to see them add to Assassin's Creed. I want mainly three things. I want to be able to steal someone's clothes, a guard, whoever, put his clothes on. Dump his body somewhere, and now I can impersonate this guard. I can walk anywhere, I can do anything. Now, if I do anything ordinary, like kill someone, of course, my disguise is going to be seen through, but I want to be able to impersonate someone. I think that is a gameplay mechanic that they could play with, and as you impersonate different people to get into different areas, I think it could be really cool. Second thing, I want to be able ways to kill someone besides stabbing them, shooting them, or hitting them with a poison dart. You know, I want to be able to, I don't know, give me a level where I can sneak in and pull the trap door, the lever to a trap door. I want to be able to make it look like an accident. I want to be able to poison the guy's food. I want to be able to do a lot of different things other than sneak in unseen and stab him. And that's what a lot of the game turns out to be. Which isn't bad, but I just want to see them expand on their ideas a little bit more. In the same way they expanded from Assassin's Creed 1 to Assassin's Creed 2. I guess the third thing is I want to be able to, well, and this goes along with planning or assassination. I'd like to be able to set some kind of traps. Maybe it falls in the same category as being able to poison someone or do something like that, but I want to be able to manipulate the game AI into almost into falling into my traps. For instance, you'd have those times when you'd be fighting someone or you'd be trying to assassinate someone. It just so happens that you're in a crowd and they bump the person falls into the water and dies. That was great. That was awesome. And honestly, those were some of the most satisfying aspects because it seemed like the world was working with you and you could be manipulating it into an event happening without actually doing it yourself. And those are some of the most awesome moments in gaming when you feel like you can do that. I kind of want more of that. So that being said, that's my hopes for Assassin's Creed Revelations. We'll see what it does. I'm really looking towards the conclusion of Ezio's story. I like the fact that they're tying it back to Altair. Hopefully we'll see Desmond conclude. And then the next game in the Assassin's Creed franchise, I hope there's another one, is new person, new ancestors, new time in history. That being said, moving on to the next game in the list. A game that I'm sure is on just about everyone's list, Mass Effect 3. Mass Effect 3, in my mind, is probably one of the most powerful, one of the most powerful franchises this console generation. Looking back at, you know, Knights of the Old Republic, I can see how kind of it was born from that, but it really came into its own and gave us something unique with being a true RPG first-person shooter. And I like what they've done with it so far. It's funny, Gamers Garage, their podcast a while back, had a little bit of a discussion on why that game would not work as a movie, specifically the Mass Effect trilogy as we know it. And it's because, well, first of all, let's say I agree with them, and I thought the point that they brought out was interesting. It's all about the fact that Mass Effect was designed to give everyone their own experience. That's why co-op doesn't really work in Mass Effect, because the whole game is about you being Shepard. And your Shepard is going to be different than everyone else's. Your Shepard is going to act different than anyone else's. He's going to look different. He's going to fight different. My Shepard, let me think. My Shepard looks like a mix probably between myself and Will Smith. My Shepard is Paragon, unless he's pushed to a certain point, and then he goes Renegade. And he's less of a captain of the ship type of person than a tech-skilled assassin with a mission leading a crew, you know. It's funny. Also, part of My Shepard's history is the fact that he didn't complete Thane's loyalty mission successfully. Thane is dead, and in my mind as that character, that is one of his main failures in the course of his life as Commander Shepard, as commander of the Normandy. So, I mean, having that, your character have that kind of history, and remembering when you did this, remembering when you did that, and remembering the love interest that you had in the first game, and whether or not you chose to have another one in the second game, it's really cool. I just think it's cool that each of us have our own history with this game. My story is not exactly like anyone else's. You know, certain people I decided to take with me on certain missions and things like that. Some of those decisions are trivial, but for instance, for me, I have always taken, it's not Grunt. I forgot what the name of his race is, but the big, almost frog-like looking rhinoceros guys. I'll remember it here in a second. The Krogans. I always take a Krogan with me in the combat. He is a powerhouse, damage sponge, ultimate warrior type of guy, and as a result, I always take one with me. So with Mass Effect 3, if I have a choice between saving the Krogan race and saving another race, my Shepard, I play with a Krogan on my team. Maybe I choose the Krogan over someone else or another race. So it's an interesting idea to have that kind of history with a game, individual history with a game, and being able to enjoy that through the course of an overarching trilogy as you try to save Earth. And so, with that being the case, a movie wouldn't work, because once you put a movie in and you start saying, okay, this first movie is Mass Effect 1, second movie is Mass Effect 2, third movie is Mass Effect 3, you're establishing a canon. His Shepard doesn't look like mine, so the Shepard on camera is the real Shepard. Mine's a fake Shepard. Oh, he didn't make this decision, so that's what really happened, and my Shepard experience isn't like that. Or, you know, this person, he saved this person and let this other person die. Well, I didn't choose to do that, so what he did is canon, and mine's some kind of offshoot alternate universe. If they release a movie based on that anytime soon, I think it'll undermine everyone's experiences with this game. So do I want a Mass Effect movie? A movie in that universe? That's my dog. My dog's barking. Yes, I do want a Mass Effect movie in this universe. Do I want a Mass Effect movie of the trilogy we're playing through now? No. I do not want that Mass Effect movie. At least not anytime soon. So with Mass Effect, there's a lot of different things we have to look forward to. And what I want for the next Mass Effect is what they're talking about. It's a blend of Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 1. Mass Effect 2 had the depth of human interaction, the style of combat situations that I wanted to see in the next Mass Effect game, but what it lacked was gun customization and a lot of the RPG elements that I missed from the other game. I mean, shield bypass ammo was awesome whenever you had to fight Saren at the end, because one thing I found was, and this is probably my own, you know, not managing my crew well, we could all do fine fighting him, but his shield was huge. Well, I equip everyone with shield bypass ammo, and I found my way to kill Saren. I'm sure other people had other different ways. But I liked having those options. Different ammo, different types and ways to fight. The other thing that was kind of... I want more consequences for my action, because the other thing that was kind of odd with Mass Effect... and I didn't see this until I played through it the second time. It is Mass Effect 2. For instance, the decision to wake Legion, or wake Grunt, or leave them in their containers really didn't matter as far as that game was concerned, other than you didn't have a loyalty mission, and you didn't have another playable character on your team. Well, not playable, but another character you could take with you. Other than that, it really didn't, you know, have any kind of effect on what happened. It wasn't like... Let me back up and let me say it this way. Waking Thane, or not Thane, waking Grunt, or waking Legion up, and having them, and then completely ignoring them, not doing their loyalty mission, never using them on your team, maybe they died at the end, maybe they didn't. That was basically no different than leaving them asleep. There were no consequences for not doing their loyalty mission other than their own personal death. And so what I want with this game is I want real consequences. Because those decisions, whether or not to wake up this genetically engineered Krogan that might just rip your head off, they felt like they had weight. But then in the end you realize that it didn't seem like they did. So that's what I want for this. I want real decisions that have weight in the game I'm playing right now, not the promise of something happening in the future. I also hope that this game doesn't try to be so cinematic that they take away the tactics of fighting and replace it with set pieces. A lot of what I've seen in this game so far, I've seen Shepard stab a bunch of people because they're showing off the new Omniblade, and I've seen huge set pieces fighting Reapers. I hope they don't do that only and leave behind a lot of the tactical things that you can do and a lot of the tactical combat options you had in the game. Better abilities and more powerful abilities, more interesting abilities is always nice. But other than the things I'm mentioning, I really think BioWare has a great direction with this franchise. They're on a roll, and I don't think they're going to screw Mass Effect 3 up. I think Mass Effect 3 is going to be exactly what we're all looking for. We're going to see a payoff from a lot of the main decisions that we've made so far, and hopefully it'll just be a very fun game that we can all enjoy for many, many, many hours. So speaking of sequels, ambitious sequels, such as the change from Mass Effect 1 to Mass Effect 2, Batman Arkham City is going to be an interesting game, and I'm not quite sold that it's going to do great. I'm not quite sold on it that it's going to be everything I hope it to be, but it will be interesting to see how it plays out. This is because the first Batman was I have mixed emotions about the first Batman. Batman Arkham Asylum. It was awesome to see Batman realized in that kind of hyper-realistic world. Seeing Arkham Asylum from the inside was awesome, being trapped there. Even the fighting and the hunter mode, those stages you would go through where you had to take everyone out silently, I enjoyed all those. What I didn't necessarily enjoy were the boss battles. The boss battles seemed very, very gamey. It's like you'd play through this section where you felt like you were Batman and you were doing things, or that section where you as the Scarecrow messes with your head, you're walking through and you see your dead parents, and then you walk through that alleyway where they were killed. All very gripping, all very emotional. Good way to preface people on the origin story of Batman as you play this game. Then you go to a boss battle, which basically you fought a bunch of Banes, for lack of a better word. It was all basically people hopped up on his venom, and you did that several times. I mean, I really didn't enjoy that. I really didn't think that it wasn't what I expected from the game. Because the first boss, I think it was Zaz, and you had to figure out how to attack him without letting someone get shot, I think. And he appears more than once. And I liked that idea of, here's a boss, and it's not really a... beat him, figure out a way to beat him till he's unconscious, but figure out this little puzzle. I like that type of boss. And it seemed like that was few and far between, and what we really got was lots of, the thing with Poison Ivy. Not saying that the graphics weren't great or the gameplay wasn't good, but it felt like I was playing Mario Brothers. Run light, run left, dodge, fight two guys, shooter. Or I was playing some kind of Metroid or a throwback to something on Atari, almost. Because all of a sudden the gameplay boiled down to jumping left, jumping right, and memorizing a boss pattern. Well, this game was gripping, it was epic, it was you are the Dark Knight. I didn't expect to have to memorize boss patterns in that game, but that's what it basically devolved to. So what I would like for Arkham City is to see it rise above that. The prospect of playing something like Batman Arkham Asylum in an open world, scaling buildings, swinging from buildings, that sounds awesome. I mean, how can anyone not love that? And so I'm ready for that. I'm ready to play this game. I just hope they can rise above some of their mistakes that they've made and really, really capitalize on the success of the first game. Because it was a really good game, the best Batman game, or possibly even superhero game to date, with a few small missteps, and I'm hoping that they can continue, they can capitalize on that, they can continue to do that, and make a game that is worthy of the success they had in the first place. So, that's my hope for that. Looking into the next game on the list is what kicks off the fall. I can't think of a better way as an Xbox owner to kick off the fall than Gears of War 3. I am so excited about this game on so many levels. This game has the potential to be the biggest game this year and to outshine every other game coming out this fall. And I know that sounds huge, but this game could outshine, as far as quality and depth, Call of Duty. It could outshine Battlefield. It could outshine Batman. It could outshine all these different games because of what they're about to do. They've learned from Gears 1. They've learned from Gears 2. Okay, if you have been reading the books that Karen Travis is writing about Gears of War, they're awesome. There's depth. You understand the characters. Reading the book that happens between Gears 1 and Gears 2 made me enjoy Gears 2 more, because when I saw those characters in the game, they didn't seem so flat. They didn't seem so steroided up. They actually had feelings. They actually had depth to them, emotions. And as a result, that game was deeper to me, and the story was a lot deeper than it was for people who hadn't read the books. I've been trying to catch up so far. I have three of the Gears books. I don't know if there's another one coming out or not. But I have these three Gears books. I'm trying to get through them because Karen Travis is writing this, or wrote the story for Gears 3. So the depth that you saw in the first games, in those first two books, actually first three books, hopefully she will capitalize on that and have some kind of callbacks or have that kind of depth in the third game. So as far as story-wise, we have a renowned sci-fi novelist writing the story for this game. I expect some answers. I expect some unanswered questions. I expect a thrill ride because, heck, it's epic and that's what they do. And I expect to care about these characters, whether they end up living or dying or whatever happens at the end. So that's first of all. The story of this game is going to be awesome. Second, the Gears multiplayer has always been something of a challenge for me, in the sense that I powered up the first Gears game, died a couple times, quit. Powered up the second Gears game, died a couple times, quit. The Gears 3 beta, I actually had fun with. I'm not stellar at it. I'm still on the low end of my team, but I'm at least getting 7 or 8 kills. It's a lot less unforgiving than the other two Gears games were. And so I have hopes for this Gears multiplayer. They've removed the host advantage, which I also appreciate, because that was just so irritating, it was insane. So now we'll have dedicated servers for Gears 3. You can't really ask for more on that front. They've also balanced the weapons so that the shotgun isn't the be-all, end-all. My favorite moments of the beta were having someone try to roll towards me and gun me down with a shotgun, and I had that retro lancer that has low accuracy but a high damage output, and I was just downing people left and right. I was like, yeah, roll at me again. Because in the old Gears game, there was no counter for that unless you had a power weapon. So if I want to play with my lancer, or I want to play with a hammer burst, or I want to play with Gorgon pistol, I'm out of luck, because someone's just going to roll up to me and shotgun me in the back, and it's game over. Instant kill. And I don't like playing that way. Shotguns are fun in certain games, but I'm a mid-range fighter in most of my multiplayer games, so I really don't like shotgun-style gameplay all the time. And that's basically what a lot of the Gears games were. Not saying it was wrong. Some people love it, and that's good for them. But for me, and the type of gamer that I am, the old Gears multiplayer didn't fit. The new weapons and the rebalancing, and even the new maps that they have, look to be very fun, and I can't wait to get my hands on that multiplayer again. That being said, the crowning jewel of this Gears game was going to be what made Gears 2 so awesome, and it's Horde mode. Everyone's looking at this saying, oh, you know what, they're adding tower defense elements to Horde mode now. Oh, cool. If you ever got together with a dedicated group of people and played Horde, and you were downing the Locust and taking their shields and stuff like that, it turned into a tower defense game with waves. Basically, what you would do is, once you got up to the higher levels, you'd pick out a place, you'd camp out there, and you'd have your shields put up to block entries or whatever, you'd have your power weapons, you kill a wave, run out, grab all the loot you could, come back, and get ready for the next wave. It ended up being a tower defense kind of thing. So what they're doing now is they're just giving you the ability to upgrade your equipment and to buy back into a round so that you can match the difficulty of the enemies. You get better guns. You can buy power weapons. You can eventually get something like the mech suit that they're going to have in the game. So you can be equal to the challenge that's coming at you. The other thing that's awesome about that is that they can throw bigger challenges at you now. You can fight a Brumac on foot because you've got the weaponry to do it. This Horde mode that they're coming out with is going to be the best Horde mode, firefight, zombies, whatever you want to call it, the best co-op bot-killing mode in a game to date. I don't doubt it at all. I can't wait to play it. I spent way too much time and way too many nights staying up till 1:30 and 2 a.m. on a work night playing this game and going to the next work the next day tired because it was so awesome. I'm talking about Gears 2 Horde mode. Gears 3 is just going to crank it up another notch. Can't wait for it. So, thinking of Microsoft exclusives, we've got Gears. Also, we've got Halo. Halo Anniversary, and it's kind of funny. You would think that me is a Halo fanboy. I love Halo 1, Halo 2, Halo 3. I love Halo Reach, although I think they took some things in a direction that I didn't necessarily like with the multiplayer and with the single player. But I love Halo. That is the universe. That is what kept me as a hardcore gamer through my period of college, when I was so busy that it would have been easy just to completely let games go. Halo is what kept me in it. Playing those campaigns, loving the story. So Halo Anniversary should be something that I'm into. And I am into it to an extent. I am excited about the new maps being added to Reach. I'm excited about the tidbits, the terminals, I guess, that they're adding to the campaign to give us hints of Halo 4. And, of course, I want my Halo collection to be complete. But what I think is that people are going to be kind of awakened a little bit to a lot of their love of the first Halo. While the first Halo was good, I would argue it had the best story, some of the best moments in Halo, and some of the best sandbox gameplay that they kind of got away from later. But some of the best sandbox gameplay in a Halo game. I give them that. What I don't necessarily think is that people are going to be cool with the way the guns sound, unless the sounds have been remastered. If they're using the old Halo soundtrack, the guns are going to sound weak. Or sound set, let me say, not soundtrack. And the other thing that I'm not too happy about is the way Master Chief looks. To me, he looks almost like a cartoon, like you're kind of controlling a Muppet or something. Not to knock what they've done, but I don't think that they should have used that character model for the Master Chief. They should have basically dressed him up in Halo, Halo multiplayer, Halo 3 or Halo Reach, how you could change your armor pieces and you could create the old armor set with that armor, with your armor pieces. They should have used one of those character models, in my mind, as the old Master Chief, because I think in the end, when you compare their Master Chief to the Master Chief Master Chief armor set you can create in one of these other games, the other games are actually going to look better. And that's sad because that person isn't in those games. That armor set isn't in those games, but Bungie recreated it better than whoever 343 Industries had recreate the original Master Chief. So that's one of the things I'm hoping for. And of course, let's face it, this Halo anniversary is to Halo 4 in the same way that ODST was to Halo Reach. This is the precursor to the game we're getting next year. It's a little stopgap thing to remind us that Halo still exists and we should all still love it. I don't have a problem with it, because this time at least they're selling it for $40 and not $60. So, I'm looking forward to the campaign maps. Hopefully it's good. I don't know if I'm prepared to pay $40 for it. I think I would rather see it in the 20 to 25 top end of 30 range, and I may wait till it drops to that price to buy it. But it is something to look forward to, and it is coming out, and I'm sure it is going to be very, very popular. Other notable games that are coming out that I hope we do podcasts on for Gamers Transform, you've got Rage coming out on the 13th, which kind of looks like, in my mind, the Fallout world a little bit, except for a little bit more over the top and a little bit more first-person shooter instead of RPG than Fallout. So, people are saying it's one of the best-looking games on 360 or on PS3 to date. And so, I'm just going to wait and see how that turns out. Deus Ex comes out August 23rd. This game has me intrigued for this one reason. Evidently, when you're completing missions, you can go through an entire mission, and through your conversations and sneaking around, you can complete the mission without killing one single person. Or you can go in and you can lay waste to the entire place. That kind of variation in a mission structure is intriguing to me, and I want to see what we do to it. I mean, most people are going to play, I'm sure, a combination of both, but I look forward to seeing what they do with that. Hopefully we get to do both of these on Gamers Transform, and you hear us do a roundtable on them. But always, I have to talk to my partner in crime, Soldier X, and see what he's got. So those are the games that I am excited about for the upcoming console generation. It's still our console generation. It's not the upcoming console generation. But those are the games I'm excited about. Those are the things that are on my mind and why I can't wait for the fall. I just got to figure out where the money and the time is going to come from to play them all. So, that basically does it for the episode for this week. Only other thing going on I can think of, gaming industry, was kind of a big deal. EA bought PopCap, and a lot of people kind of drew back or kind of shuddered and worried about PopCap, but I don't know what the future of PopCap is, but all I see this is EA is future-proofing itself. They need a division that makes these casual games, because that's where the expansion of the market is, that's where the new money is. I mean, that's a lot where a lot of the push is going to be in gaming in the future. And if EA is not a part of it, that's money that's not going into their pockets. So just like any other large corporation or large force in the industry, they're going to protect themselves to make sure that they are part of the future. And so you're going to see, even going forward, even more so, a lot of these indie developers who are making these breakout games, they're going to be purchased. and they're going to be included into these huge monolithic gaming industry giants that we have, that we've had for so many years, that we've had since, you know, Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo. They're going to be a part of it. And so I hope everything turns out well for the guys at PopCap. I hope they continue to work creatively as they have, but I don't think that that really is the end of the world. I think it's just a testament to how valuable PopCap is and to where the industry is going. So the next next news that's on my mind is Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. So Marvel vs. Capcom 3 came out, sold it at $60, and a lot of people were initially frustrated with the fact that it didn't have all the features that they were looking for, didn't have all the characters they were looking for, and now, so recently to its release, they're releasing Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, which is not DLC, it is a completely new game. Understandably, the true fans of the series are a little bit frustrated. I would be too if I was in their position. I personally didn't buy Marvel vs. Capcom 3, although I wanted to. I didn't buy it for this reason. For me personally, type of gamer that I am, fighting games are not worth $60 to me. And this is because I suck at them. For me to become good at a fighting game, I would have to stop playing all other games and dedicate hours every day to learning my characters and getting good at a fighting game. It's just not intuitive for me. And because I'm not willing to do that, if I buy a fighting game, I'm never even going to be mediocre at it. I'm always going to be bad at it. I'm always going to have a hard time playing through the campaign and winning everything. And as a result, it's just not an experience that, for me personally, is worth $60. So although I wanted Marvel vs. Capcom, I didn't buy it. Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 has everything that Marvel vs. Capcom 3 had, plus new characters. It's got a spectator mode and a few other things, balance tweaks, things like that, new levels, things to make the game basically an updated, better version of the game they just sold. And they're selling it at $40. Now, Capcom did this with something similar with Street Fighter, and I didn't, although people kind of complained, I didn't hear a whole lot of complaint around Street Fighter 4 versus Super Street Fighter 4 and the things they corrected. And so similarly, Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom 3, I think it's going to blow over. I mean, they're not charging full price for it. Now that the buzz is out there about it and this one's come out, they're probably going to get a sale from me. Whereas I was probably not going to buy Marvel versus Capcom 3 for a very long time. At $40, I'm willing to buy Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom because I'm thinking that that experience may be worth $40 to me. I honestly don't own any fighting games, so a comic book heavy fighting game may be what's up my alley because I do like comic books. So something that I'm hoping we see in this next run of games, all these iterations, Modern Warfare 3, Gears 3, Battlefield 3, is better matchmaking. And not from the standpoint of good connections or low lag or once partying up quickly and getting into a game. I want all that, and I'm glad they're giving me that. But what I want is better matchmaking based on skill. Because of what I've found with not so much Gears, because I haven't played a whole lot of Gears multiplayer, but specifically with the Call of Duty franchise, with Battlefield, with Uncharted, Assassin's Creed, those games tend to not match you as tightly based on skill, and as a result, you end up playing with people who have perks and things that, you know, you don't have, and it's just a lopsided fight, and you never really get the chance to be on an even keel with everyone. You're always trying to catch up to the guy who plays the game 12 hours a day and has already unlocked everything. Uncharted is an interesting example of this. Let me back up. Assassin's Creed, in my mind, in some ways, if you had a game that was matched badly based on skill, that game was broken. Because the person would have perks to be able to pick you out of a crowd, or a perk to throw down something to disorient you if you were the hunter that you couldn't defend against, or possibly even as the person who was being hunted, they could pick the hunter out of a crowd. And as a result, the playing field was not level in any way. The game was just broken in some ways. I'm not saying that the game was broken. I appreciated what it did with the multiplayer, and I love that multiplayer. But in some ways, bad matchmaking could completely ruin a match, especially if there was a bunch of level 20s partied up together as a team, and your team was, you know, a bunch of randomly matched ones and twos. Game over. You have no chance of winning. I didn't like that, and so I'm hoping that they correct that in the new Assassin's Creed. With the Uncharted franchise, what we've seen with the Uncharted beta that just ended is a bigger emphasis on perks and on gun upgrades and things like that, similar to Call of Duty. I'm not saying that's bad, but when you do that, now you really need to make people based on skill. Not skill, but their rank. Because you don't want to end up in a situation like Assassin's Creed. If the Uncharted 3 multiplayer is heavily based on... has very large demarcations, as in a rank 19 will always beat a rank 2 basically under any circumstances, because he's got buffs to take less damage and buffs to increase the magazine size of his gun and the damage that it does. If that's the case with Uncharted 3, I can guarantee you I am not going to get in that game, because the one thing I demand is a fair chance to win. I don't play games to fight uphill and lose. And perhaps that's just the Halo player in me. But I believe that each team should have the equal opportunity to win the match walking in. Not simply average the ranks of the two teams and say, okay, the win's going to go to that team because they have an average higher rank. So that's what I'm hoping as we look towards all these games coming out, is that we have better, higher quality skill and rank-based matchmaking. If they do that, I'll be happy. Well, anyways, guys, thank you so much for listening to the Mindspace podcast. I know that it's been an hour of me talking, but it's been so long since we've had a show that I had a lot of stuff to get out. I thank you for listening, and I'll see you in episode 3.